But what happened was a number of my Democratic colleagues in the House and Senate thought that I was going to hurt them in the races.
New admission, President Biden. That happened over the weekend. Good morning, everybody. I'm Phil Vandervoort, John Carlson's producer, sitting in for John this morning. Those words from President Biden there, at least attempting to explain why it was that he withdrew from the race. We'll get into more of the specifics about that and how it differs from all the things he was saying just a month ago, back on July 11th. He said that yesterday on CBS News. On July 11th, 1 month ago yesterday, he was saying several different things about why he was staying in the race. So we'll play you that juxtaposition here in just a little bit. If you listen to John Carlson's show on a regular basis, if you listened last week, you know that gas prices were reduced for a couple of hours last Friday morning in Berrien, thanks to Let's Go Washington and the campaign for several different initiatives around the state. Our young Zach, a morning producer here on KVI, and does a lot of the operations around KVI now with our program director, Kevin Doddrell. Young Zach, you also hear him on Ari's show, Ari Hoffman, 3 to 6 in the afternoon. He went down to the Berrien Shell station there on First Avenue South, and he talked to a lot of the drivers that were topping off their gas tanks on Friday morning, getting gas for $3.47 a gallon, the national average, instead of the much higher price, the retail price here in Washington, after first, one of the highest gas taxes in the nation that the state of Washington imposes, and then the additional hidden gas tax that we kind of describe as being connected to Governor Jay Inslee's Climate Commitment Act. The tax cap and invest plan, I guess, is really the best way to describe it. So you'll hear a little bit about that. There's a big switch. If my math is correct, it's just a little bit under a 5,000 vote swing in the battle for public lands commissioner in this state. And it means that one of two Republicans has now been assigned to third place, and a very liberal Dow Constantine style Democrat is now in the top two to advance in the primary now to the general election. And it happened after one night of tabulation last Thursday night into Friday. So those are a couple of things that we'll get to. Lars Larson has a big story that I want you to be able to hear. Lars Larson will join me sitting in for John Carlson coming up at 6:50 this morning. And this involves the potential hack of the Trump campaign. And according to Microsoft, the hack seems to be coming from a threat connected to Iran. So Lars has been covering this story all weekend long. He's got a dossier on that that you are going to want to hear after we know what Iran is trying to do in support of Hamas against Israel. You're going to want to hear this. So make sure you're here this morning at 6:50 when Lars Larson joins me as I sit in for John Carlson this morning. Let me welcome in Mark Christopher. Mark,
good
the radio
see you.
Legend. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, good to be here. And I see it's all dark over there in the Carlson suite.
Yeah, so I guess John's taking the day off. He's on a road trip. He's off to see his son in Oregon.
Oh, good day
so,
for a road trip.
John will be back. He'll be back tomorrow.
Not Tory, though. We got everything covered. It was a busy weekend around here news-wise, and a lot of local stories as well. Of course, the Olympics with the finale yesterday, and what you just shared of what we have. So
I've got a couple of Olympic updates. I'll give you the medal count and a little breakdown of how teams are doing based on how many Olympian athletes you send. Because if you send a bunch of people, you'd think that you'd win a bunch of medals. So we'll kind of break that down. And then there's another update on what some of those swimmers were trying to do to prevent getting infected from swimming in the Seine River. So I'll tell you what they were drinking, and there's no science behind what they were drinking in an effort to try and combat whatever polluted water they might have come in contact with. But
E. coli concern in that river because of storms and the washout.
It's one of those things. If you think it's working for you, you might as well try it, even if it doesn't have any proven clinical medical benefit. But, athletes get superstitious. So that's something else that we'll get into here in just a moment. Let me continue with this Joe Biden situation. Let me play you a longer clip from what he admitted to CBS News about why it was that he quit the 2024 race. He says it's because of the polls despite what he said back in July. And listen for the name he drops in here.
Look, the polls we had showed that it was a neck and neck race. We'd have been down to the wire. But what happened was a number of my Democratic colleagues in the House and Senate thought that I was going to hurt them in the races. And I was concerned if I stayed in the race, that would be the topic. You'd be interviewing me about why did Nancy Pelosi say, why did someone... And I thought it'd be a real distraction.
He did one of his classic Joe things there. He sort of says something and then realized, oh, maybe I shouldn't talk about that. And he sort of switched directions here. But he name checks Nancy Pelosi there. And that goes to this ongoing speculation that she was the one that orchestrated, either pressured other congressional members to go, okay, we got to go to Biden. We got to say to Biden, hey, look, you're going to probably with your candidacy in 2024 hurt the Democrats' reelection chances. You're going to lose the Senate potentially, could make things much worse in control of the House, where Republicans do have a very slim majority. I can't recall for sure, but I think it's about 5-vote majority that the Republicans have right now. So we went from Biden saying on July 11th, when there was all this speculation that he needed to step aside and get out of the race, on July 11th, he was staying in the race because he said that the nation was in worse shape than he previously realized due to Trump. And that due to that, that's why he did not want to step down, or why he was going to stay in the race. So we went from that to this.
My Democratic colleagues in the House and Senate thought that I was going to hurt them in the races.
So back to July 11th, 1 month ago. This was one of the things Biden said in a solo press conference telling the world why he was staying in the race a month ago.
There were at least 5 presidents running, or incumbent presidents, who had lower numbers than I have now, later in the campaign. Hmm. So there's a long way to go in this campaign. And so I'm just going to keep moving.
There was a long way to go, one whole month. So a month ago, he's saying, hey, look, bad poll numbers don't matter to me. But then yesterday he said, well, they were showing me all these poll numbers. And now he's using that as his justification. So we have, you know, more conflict. I think we have more questions than answers so far. Here's another thing that he said back in July, on July 11th, in this solo press conference, when he was asked at that point why he was staying in the race.
I think I'm the most qualified person to run for president. I beat him once, and I will beat him again.
Him being Donald Trump. So that's what he said on July 11th. Now, it's like, well, you know, all these polls and all these congressional Democrats, Pelosi, but not Pelosi. They're the ones that are telling me I better not run. And I wanted to be able to give you a little context, because every news outlet around the nation, around the world probably, is playing this clip of Biden yesterday on CBS saying, well, you know, I saw these polls and I need I don't think any of them are going to be playing a couple of those clips that I just played for you from a month ago about the exact opposite, that he said those things didn't matter to him and he was staying in the race. So I think this is just going to fuel more questions about what really happened and how it really happened. But the one fact that remains right now is that it's down to Trump and Harris. And if you vote with your head and your wallet, that's probably a pretty easy decision for a vote to make on the presidential election right now.
You know, going back in all the comments there that you were playing of Biden mm-hmm. with that interview yesterday on CBS. Have you noticed in all your experiences here in the political background you have, Phil, mm-hmm. and I'd ask the same question to John, so many polls daily now.
Yeah.
And it's not just one
yeah.
or two.
Yeah.
Some we're getting some from sources we'd never even heard of. Mm-hmm. And both the candidates you know, just wandering over the weekend here. At one point, you know, Vice President Harris and then former President Trump were saying, look what the polls are doing, look what they're saying. And then they're like, yesterday I heard Harris say, okay, don't pay attention to the polls now.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I think that's instructive for KVI listeners to think about is if you hear a news report and you're like, new national poll says, you know, candidate X over candidate Y. National poll, it doesn't really matter, because the cumulative vote is not what we base the selection of our president around. We base it on the Electoral College. So that's why you need to have a statewide vote as it pertains to some of the swing states. So though that first things first, if you hear some news outlet or news website touting a new national poll says Kamala Harris has a lead over Trump, that doesn't matter. That is irrelevant.
And both candidates
because
were
we don't do a popular vote to select our president.
Right. And both candidates were in the western states here. We had Trump in Montana. Harris went back to, you know, some home area there in California. Mm-hmm. And then new polls were coming out all weekend. Here we go. Here's what the West is
so
thinking.
So that would be the thing to remember. Now, there are going to be a whole lot of news outlets today reporting on swing state polls, and that's relevant. That's what you want to look at. Some of these have Kamala Harris, at least as of the last time that the poll was taken, if it was the end of last week or over the weekend. Kamala Harris is up in quite a few. I think Kamala Harris's campaign and Democrats are touting that. But the polls are all within the margin of error. So it's that close.
Right.
So, and again, the polling is just something that the media gets fixated on.
It's almost like a fill content
story. Yeah, exactly. It's like, how can we take up time in our newscast? Mm-hmm. And we'll use this information. But, you know, unless the election's tomorrow, I don't think that that's truly very relevant. And our attention span, specific to politics in this country, is so short. In 2 weeks, we're going to be into a whole new crisis. And there will be a whole new storyline. And it'll change how people respond in a poll, even though it doesn't apply to their actual vote. So that's why I was kind of going to sum this all up by saying, if you vote with your head and your wallet, you're probably going with Trump in this election. If you have a lot of disposable income, you are well-to-do, and you vote with your heart, then you're going to be voting for Kamala Harris. Now, if you're a working-class person, you've been cutting back because of inflation on food, inflation on housing, inflation on energy prices. Just ask yourself if you can really afford 4 years of Kamala Harris, because those years from 2024, 2025, when she's inaugurated, if she were to win, to 2028, those years are going to look really similar to the last 4 years of affording the Joseph R. Biden presidency.
And we're now at 3 months till elections. September 10th debate. We've got former President
That's the
Trump,
date on the calendar.
Vice President Harris.
Trump-Harris.
ABC TV, Tuesday, September 10th.
Both. Now, I want to add a sidebar to this. The business climate, financial markets that have, you know, contributed to this increase in inflation in a lot of cases, those financial markets, they like certainty. And that certainty is a key difference between Democrats and Republicans when it comes to control of Washington, D.C. and Congress. I'll try and give you a couple of examples. Democrats campaign on, we got to raise taxes on the rich. Sometimes it's we got to raise taxes on businesses, corporate tax rates, things like that. They usually seek to punish businesses and investors with higher taxes, like I'm talking about. You got to tax the rich. Now, when Democrats are in control politically, that uncertainty about how investment and business will be taxed, that makes investors less likely to risk their money on new investments. They'll take that money, they'll put it into something that's a little bit more stable. Bonds, as an example. And conversely, with Republicans in control, investors and companies usually know they aren't going to be encumbered by excessive taxation or heavy taxation. They're more likely to risk their money on investments at that point because they know the risk is usually going to be worth the reward to do that. And so in 3-4 years of the Trump administration, pretty strong economy. It did get impacted by COVID restrictions and shutdowns and all of those concerns. But compare a couple of the years of the Trump economy being strong with the slow, tortoise-like growth and economy that we had during the Obama and Biden years. They were saddled with slow growth because of that uncertainty. Are we going to pass a Green New Deal and impose a bunch of taxes to subsidize much more expensive quote-unquote green energy? So the energy prices, access to petroleum, drilling, natural gas, those things were always a little bit of a question mark with the Obama-Biden years. And they weren't with the Trump years. Energy prices were pretty affordable, certainly by comparison. And here's a little proof for my thesis. Kamala Harris was campaigning in Detroit last week. She spoke to union members at a union hall. Listen to what Kamala Harris said to these union members in Detroit last week.
We believe in the collective. We're not falling for these folks who are trying to divide us, trying to separate us, trying to pull us apart. That's not where the strength lies.
We believe in the collective. And Tim Walz, standing right next to her, vice presidential candidate standing right next to her, that's the type of talk that makes financial investors and business investors reluctant to risk their money on other endeavors when it comes down to Democrats in control of Washington, D.C., or potentially a state capital like Sacramento, California, Olympia, here in our state. So those are some things to remember as it relates to what's happening with the presidential election and where our economy ends up going as it relates to the presidential election. Let me do a follow-up here real quickly in the last couple of moments that we have in this segment. Phil Vandervoort, John Carlson's producer, sitting in for John this morning. I went on a rant last Friday on the show with John about wildfires, two of them, causing problems in the North Cascades. The Easy Pass Fire on Highway 20, the Pioneer Wildfire, north end of Lake Chelan, the town of Stehekin. Mm-hmm. Well, this revelation came through last night about the wildfire near Stehekin at the northwest corner of Lake Chelan.
The Pioneer Fire burning right here near Lake Chelan continues to threaten the town of Stehekin. At last check, it has burned just under 37,000 acres, only 13% contained. A go now evacuation order remains in place. Last night, crews began dropping fire retardant on the ridgelines above Boulder Creek.
Started dropping aerial flame and fire retardant near Stehekin. And that's what I was railing about on Friday morning with John. Nothing was being done to fight the Pioneer Fire. State officials kept saying, oh, we're just going to have to let this burn out naturally when the weather turns in October and we tend to get more rain. Oh, now we're able to drop fire retardant from aerial attack. So over the weekend, somebody with the state apparently changed their mind. For me, I hope that Jamie Herrera Butler, who's running for public lands commissioner, incorporates this into her campaign. Emphasize that aerial firefighting when applicable, rather than this last second decision by state officials, or maybe it was Jay Inslee. I don't know. Hopefully Seattle news media starts asking this question. Hey, why was this whole idea of we got to let the Pioneer Fire burn itself out changed to, it's getting really close to Stehekin and things are looking really bad for Stehekin. Let's authorize this aerial attack on the Pioneer Fire. Because that somebody needs to ask some questions about that of the people that are allegedly leading the state in Olympia.
Quick note here, Phil, just on the fires. Yeah. We got five fires now, separate fires in the Okanagan. Mm-hmm. We have an issue on Highway 12, White Pass. I got at 4 weeks, that highway's been closed from White Pass all the way down to the junction there at 410 mm-hmm. and Highway 12 just west of Natchez.
I've heard it's close to Rimrock, where I have a lot of friends that have liked to go on summer vacation.
Businesses and towns like Packwood, last town you hit mm-hmm. before you get to White Pass going east, limited hours. They're not getting the trucks coming through with all the goods that need to go back and forth. Right. They have to go down to the gorge. So big concern on that fire, and people are wondering, why are these fires still burning?
Yeah. So somebody changed their mind over the weekend when it got bad enough that they could do aerial firefighting all of a sudden. Go figure. In for John Carlson this morning, Phil Vandervoort will do the social media sweep coming up next. I got an Olympic update for you on what it was that swimmers in the Seine River, the Olympians, were drinking so that they hopefully wouldn't get sick from swimming in that polluted Seine River water in Paris. Taking a three-day weekend, doing some family stuff. I'm sitting in for John, along with the radio legend Mark Christopher. I'm Phil Vandervoort. This hour, this point in the hour, we do the social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. Into the Olympics, and the U.S. Tops the medals standings at 126 medals. China comes in at number two. And if you look at the team size, the United States almost, just about the same ratio of Olympic team participants to medals won. If you divide 91 China medals by 388 team members, you get about a 0.234 medals. 0.23 medals for every participant. The U.S. is just an eyelash under that at 0.212. So the U.S. won significantly more medals, but has a slightly larger team. No other team really even gets close to where the U.S. and China were in their medals per participant. Great Britain would have come in third if you ranked medals based on team size there. Great Britain had 65 medals total, 327 overall team participants. And then here's something that we had been following off and on related to the Olympics. This was the youngest U.S. Olympic team member, Quincy Wilson. He was running in the 400 meters, and he ran in the relay. He didn't run in the individual. He ran in the relay. He was part of a gold medal winning team. He posted a picture of himself holding up the gold medal and said on his social media handle, at Quincy Wilson 5, and he posted, "Dang, I really got school in 2.5 weeks.
See, that's the good and the fun of the Olympics. Right? You know, nobody knew this kid, and then now we do, and we're all like, 16, what an exciting
going
moment.
On 17, and he's already lamenting, shoot, back cool. to school in 2.5 weeks.
Love to be in school that
weeks,
first day, but, see him come down the hallway.
Wow. And the Washington Post, give them a little bit of credit. They had a headline that went something to the effect of, Quincy Wilson has the best, so what did you do this summer story when everyone goes back to the classroom? So now this is a story that we have been following as well. The pollution in the Seine River in Paris, the Olympic events like the triathlon swimming that were in the Seine River, and a couple of, I think it was Portuguese swimmers that got sick from the E. coli. They got a stomach bug as a result of that. And The Independent, which is a British news website, has a headline about Olympic swimmers are guzzling cans of Coca-Cola to protect themselves from bacteria in the Seine.
No.
Yeah, so water quality concerns have prompted teams to drop out. Swimming trials had to be postponed. They finally did the events. It says top swimmers swear by the stuff to prevent infection. Oh, they actually sourced the story to the Wall Street Journal. So the Wall Street Journal had it. But one Team Australia swimmer said the myth of Coca-Cola is true. We will often have a Coca-Cola afterwards, just to try to flush out anything inside of us. Now, they went to a medical person for comment. A president of the American Gastroenterological Association told the Wall Street Journal that Coke is less acidic than a healthy stomach, meaning it likely wouldn't add any infection-fighting power. So according to this doctor, it's not going to do anything. But, man, if you believe it's going to help you, you're going to do it, right?
In the back pocket. Did we ever see if anybody got infected by anything of the pollution that was in the water there, the E. coli scare?
Well, there were two Portuguese swimmers that got sick. Yeah, okay. And I think there were a couple others that competed in the triathlon that got sick, but then they found out that it was a virus that got them sick. So that was how it was explained last week. So there's your Olympic update. See everybody in L.A. in 2028, at least for summer.
Can't wait
for summer games.
I can just see now we get a closure of a beach.
Italy's next for the winters. All right.
Closure of the beach on Lake Washington next summer.
Coming up next,
drink Coke. Okay.
I'm sitting in for John Carlson this morning. I'm going to play you a short clip of one of John's segments last week. But you're going to want to hear this because it revolves around this vote that's coming up in the November general election ballot on whether you want to make your payroll deduction for long-term care tax off of your paychecks, make it optional or not. You're going to want to hear this segment. It's coming up next here on The Commute with Carlson. John Carlson, Show Talk Radio 570 KVI. Welcome to Monday. It's going to be a pretty mild week weather-wise around here. So
there's sunshine and blue sky here in downtown for now, but cloudy day, cooler temperatures, 70s.
Yeah, someone's turning down the heater, that's for sure. John Carlson will be back tomorrow. He's just taking a day off, doing a road trip to see family. He'll be back tomorrow. I'm his producer, Phil Vandervoort, sitting in. You just heard the radio legend there, Mark Christopher. We're going to get to a story that you heard a week and a half ago on John's show because of Mark. We're going to give you an update on this situation involving ferry engineers and how that's impacting canceled sailing, staffing, and all of that. And then I'll get to this situation that I teased before the traffic check about John Carlson's coverage of the long-term care payroll tax that you and I all have to pay unless we opted out because we already had a long-term care plan, insurance plan that we're paying into ourselves in place. But there's going to be an initiative on the state ballot coming up in November that would allow you to opt out of this. And I would encourage you, if you're in relatively good health, to do so. I don't like this idea of the state mandating everybody has to get into some insurance plan that may or may not be applicable to them. But the state had to force everybody in on a mandated basis. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to have the financial support to make the plan even remotely viable. And it's really not viable anyways. So we'll play you a clip from John's show last week that's instructive about all this. It's going to impact how you're going to look at this issue and how you might vote in November. So we'll get to that here in just a minute. Let me get to the gas prices story. How much you been paying for gasoline? Have you been paying close to the national average, $3.47? If you were in Berrien last Friday morning, if you listened to John Carlson's show last week, you knew how to get gas for almost a dollar off, maybe 90 cents off a gallon. If you went down to Berrien, Let's Go Washington, Brian Haywood's group, the group that has helped organize and collect signatures and get some of these statewide initiatives approved for the statewide ballot. Let's Go Washington invited listeners and drivers down to Berrien in the Shell station there on First Avenue South. I think it was around 146th Street, if my recollection of the location is correct. And so that was all on Friday morning during John's show between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. We sent young Zach, our KVI co-producer, down there. He spoke to some of the drivers that were gassing up and paying about a dollar less per gallon than the normal price in Washington.
How'd you hear about the event today?
Carlson.
What made you come out? Is this a lot cheaper than anywhere else?
I live right down the street. I usually go down the Tribal down to Tacoma. They're just as cheap.
All the way down there? Wow.
Well, I work down there, too.
Oh. What's gas normally at this station if you live so close?
It is like, $4.50, $4.50.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's about a dollar cheaper today, huh?
Yeah. Sometimes up to $5.
Vote yes, pay less.
That's right.
Let's hope to see a lot more of this in the future.
That's right.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. How'd you hear about the event today?
I just drove by it.
What'd you see when you drove by?
$3.45 a gallon.
Is that the cheapest around?
Yeah. I usually go down to Fife, and they're at $3.89.
And do you know what's going on here? Do you know why it's so cheap?
No.
This is an event with Let's Go Washington. The gas price that you see is the national average. So they're subsidizing the cost of fuel to show you what life could be like in Washington if you paid the national average for gas.
Oh, okay.
Seeing this, does this change how you might vote in November on some of the initiatives regarding the gas tax?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How's it going, man? Did you know there was an event today?
No, I didn't.
What made you stop here at this gas station?
I was driving by and I saw it because I haven't seen these prices in decades, so I had to stop and fill up.
By how much do you feel like this is cheaper than what you see around town?
A lot cheaper. This doesn't feel like it's Seattle right now. You wouldn't see these prices at all.
Does this feel like, is the way you're going to vote in November on some of the initiatives change when you see prices like this?
Of course. We have to make a difference with the gas because this is ridiculous. With all the prices going up and rent, food, you know, the least the state can do is probably lower the gas, you know? Yeah, it's something that we need. Transportation is a big thing, so.
How many miles a day do you drive normally?
I'd say maybe max 30.
So this is a big deal, right?
Yeah,
dollar off
a
gallon?
Exactly, so. It really matters. It really matters. And hopefully, you know, this really happens in the future. Everybody vote, man. Thank you.
How about that? Young Zach helping spread the word From that driver's lips to the voter's ears, I would hope.
Just got a new average, AAA, here for Monday morning right now. We're at $3.44 a gallon. The other thing I've seen...
So that's the national average.
National average right now, and then add all the extra tax here. Here's what I'm seeing a lot of, and guilty as charged, because Karen says we need to do it too. A lot of people getting into these grocery stores and doing the point system, and then, we've got a gas pump. Yeah. So now what I'm seeing is you get the car showing up, and you got a couple of people. They fill the car up, you know, and there's a limit, I guess. But then they pull out the gas cans. And we just get an extra five.
Double up?
Yeah, if you're going to get the point system and save up to a dollar, and there's a limit of 25 gallons, Karen's always saying, why did you use the points up? You only did like 8 gallons, Mark. Let's get the 15 or 20 or so. You fill up the extra 5 gallon gas tank or so, make sure you're safe, and then you take it home and fill up the other cars or whatever. But I've seen an increase of that.
Yeah. You got a thought on this? Go ahead and text us. I haven't mentioned the text line yet this morning, but I'll pick up the text messages. I'll read off the ones that are applicable on the air here this morning. The text line, 206-421-5757, 206-421-5757. And Zach talked to, what, three people, I think, in that clip, or was it just two? Two of them said, I go down to five. I'll go that far to get the gasoline at a cheaper price. And one of them indicated he worked down there. But no wonder traffic in Fife is always congested. It's like, I got to get cheaper gas. Honey, I'm going to Fife. We'll see you later. That explains the Fife curve and the traffic slowdowns on I-5 and Pacific Highway South. Okay. Last week, 2 weeks ago almost now, Mark Christopher, standing right next to me here in the studio, told KVI listeners the conversations he was having on his ferry boat rides back and forth to work. And that the crews on the ferry boats were telling him that a shortage of engineers on the ferries was causing the problems of canceled sailings and delays. And then, lo and behold, last week, Fox 13 reported that Washington ferry boat engineers were rallying because of staffing issues, including some union contract demands. Apparently, their current collective bargaining agreement is about to expire, so they've got to negotiate a new one. So ferry workers are blaming this rise in angry riders and service disruptions on state ferry leadership. And one of the things that this Fox story pointed out last week, this is Fox 13 Seattle, the engineers were rallying at Coleman Dock in Seattle to draw more attention to the issue, saying the ferry department needs an overhaul. Well, last week, Como 4 had this story I'm about to play that reported on the new complaints from the engineers union. And the story you're about to hear from Como that aired last week sums up the ongoing mismanagement by Governor Jay Inslee of the state ferry department.
We continue to report on ongoing issues affecting Washington state ferries, from cancellations to aging vessels.
Today, workers are sharing their frustrations and the demands they're asking state officials to address. Como Screen of Argus has a look at how these issues are affecting workers.
We are now arriving at our destination.
Thousands of Washington State Ferry commuters have felt the impacts of delays and cancellations piling up. Engineers working on those ferries say crew shortages are to blame.
It's the lack of qualified people that are able to do this job. We don't have enough people to be able to operate, and we can't resolve that issue. That's on the state.
Members of the Marine Engineers Beneficial Association, who are responsible for the maintenance of the ferries, say they're speaking out because their workers are burnt out.
We can't fill for vacancies when somebody calls out sick, when they have an on-the-job injury, when they're on vacation, if they're out on some other form of protected leave. So our members are working an extraordinary amount of overtime.
Aside from the delays and cancellations, Washington State Ferries continues to deal with aging vessels. Washington State Ferries has 21 boats in its fleet, but only 15 are currently in service. Workers say their hands are tied because they don't have enough help to do maintenance and repairs.
These vessels have gone, they've sailed much longer than their life expectancy, and our members have worked hard to repair and to maintain these vessels. But at a certain point, You can't keep up.
Ferry workers tell me they are asking for Washington State Ferry officials to retain and recruit experienced members to improve service.
So there's the Como story. I think that lists out pretty well the continuing failures of Governor Inslee and his administration to get staff properly set up, run the ferry system properly. The voice that you heard in that clip amongst the Como reporter. That's one of the union leaders for the ferry engineers. And my hope is that those ferry engineers do not vote for Bob Ferguson for governor, because Bob Ferguson, I think, would end up being more or less more of the same. Inslee has been far more concerned about his climate agenda. Obviously, he's neglected the ferry system. You've heard it in that Como report there. Mark Christopher broke that story for us on Como News, or here on KVI, almost 2 weeks ago now. And so when you spend all of your time on the politics of the climate agenda like Inslee has, eventually what it does is it takes away from the time and attention that you have to run other existing departments in Washington, like the ferry system.
Yeah, and Karina Vargas there, she really nailed the story there. They're all catching up, Phil. I mean, every day I hit the ferry here, I'm over 2,000 sailings now in over 6 years here with my commute from Hood Canal, because I figured, well, all the ferry boats are just healthy. Then the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. Seattle-Bremerton's been 3 years at only one boat. Over the weekend, Edmonds-Kingston, first sailings in the morning were fine. And then all of a sudden, one boat, we had a cancellation because due to lack of crew. Within an hour and a half, they were back to two boats. So we're hearing about the engineers. They're the ones, you know, saying, you know, we want the contract. They're calling in sick, you know, like in the middle part of a shift perhaps or whatever. So that's the disruption. Employees are telling me. In fact, I ran into an individual just yesterday I've never seen before, but he was working at Coleman Dock. I thought he was brand new. And he said, no, I've been at this for 6 years. And I go, what's your challenge? He goes, I'm burnt out. 4 weeks of overtime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm burned out. And
because
right now
don't hire enough people.
Right. And because we don't have enough ferries, individuals are driving around, let's say if they live over in the Kingston area or Bainbridge or over in Bremerton, to come all the way over here to work at the dock here on the waterfront in Seattle at Coleman, and then having to drive all the way back home. They're all frustrated. I'm hearing numbers about 1,800 employees for Washington State ferries. They could use more. And then they said market shifting. It goes from engineers for a while, then all of a sudden we're lack of crew because of regular employees, because like we heard in Karina Vargas' story, burnout kicks in.
Yeah.
So it's just ongoing. And
aggravation.
Patience, everybody, too. It doesn't pay to sit and yell at people at the toll booth.
No need for that.
They're all doing what they can. They do an excellent job. In fact, when I was
accordingly at the ballot box, I think, is what we're trying to say here.
Right. And you know, and
Bob Ferguson will be more of the same of Jay Inslee.
And he'll finish the conversation. Again, this individual who I just met yesterday, been at it 6 years, He just said, like, thank you, brother, you know, and did the fist, like, tap my fist.
Bump,
and then he said, can I just shake your hand for being aware of, you know, we're all trying to figure this thing out.
We got to bring Lars Larson in next. He's got some important stuff to add about this story involving the Trump campaign saying that their email has been hacked. Microsoft saying that it's possibly a hack by connection to Iran. That is up next. Sitting in for John Carlson here. I'm his producer, Phil Vandervoort. John will be back for tomorrow's show. In for John Carlson here on a Monday. I am his producer, Phil Vandervoort. And at this point in the show, we're joined by our midday host from noon to 3, KVI's Lars Larson. And Lars, you have been tracking a lot of developments before and leading up to this report from the Trump campaign that's saying that they think they've been hacked and that indications are it could be connected to Iran.
And consider who's behind all of this. We have the Biden FBI raiding Trump's home and claiming classified documents. That entire case is now blown up and is gone. So you have that attack. You have the DOJ indicting Trump, and that's an attack from Biden. You've got all of these, and then you have the Secret Service, which is an executive branch agency, which gives thin coverage to Trump, and he nearly takes a bullet to the head, thankfully. It hit only his ear, but it came within a fraction of an inch of taking his life. And now we've got an attack from Iran. And for those people in your audience who say, well, that's Iran, that's a foreign country. Funded by whom? Because they were dead flat broke when Joe Biden came into office, because Donald Trump had put them dead flat broke through sanctions and freezing assets and denying the sale of oil. Who granted it? Joe Biden. Biden is funding and controlling most of the attacks on his political opponent, just like any banana republic.
Lars is following all these events. That's why you want to be listening to his show noon to 3 here, weekdays on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you very much, Lars. Have a great show. We'll continue in for John Carlson here on Talk Radio 570 KVI coming up next. Hope everybody had a fantastic weekend. Olympics are over, and for a little bit, the summer weather is kind of over. Everything cooled off over the weekend. It's going to be pretty cool by comparison this week. And then we'll have to see if summer makes a comeback or not after this week. John Carlson's out today, everybody. John's taking a three-day weekend to be with family. He'll be back tomorrow. We'll ramp things up tomorrow. And I'm his producer, Phil Vandervoort, along with the radio legend Mark Christopher. We're in for you today. We've got all kinds of local stories from over the weekend we got to tell you about. I promised this in the last half hour and got busy talking about the problems with the ferry boat system in this state under Jay Inslee. And I didn't get a chance to get into John Carlson's recent comments about the long-term care payroll tax bureaucracy that we are all paying for by virtue of a mandatory deduction in our payroll taxes and our paychecks. So I will get to that here in just a moment. But coming up at the bottom of the hour, if you missed Friday's show, this controversy in the presidential campaign about Tim Walz, the vice presidential pick for Kamala Harris, and his COVID snitch line as the Kamala Harris Tim Walz campaign are trotting around the country and saying that they're for freedom, they're for individual freedom, as they tout their record on access to abortion. They weren't for, so at least Tim Walz wasn't so much for freedom back during COVID lockdowns, and he had some pretty stringent ones, similar to what Governor Inslee was doing here in the state of Washington. So we'll get to that in just a moment. There is an election result that everybody needs to be aware of, everybody needs to know about, as it pertains to the statewide vote for public lands commissioner. And on Friday afternoon, all of a sudden, the third place finisher in the race for public lands commissioner jumped up by, had a kind of about a 5,000 or a little under 5,000 vote swing, which seems like a lot on the third day of counting. But what are you going to do? That's the way it stands right now. Dave Up the Groove is a Seattle, he's kind of from the suburban Seattle area, but he's a King County Council member. Now he wants to run for public lands commissioner. He was in third place, and he went from being down about 2,900 votes as of Thursday night's count to being ahead by about 2,000 votes as of Friday afternoon. So now Dave Up the Groove has 20.83% of the vote at second place. And Sue Cool Peterson has slipped from second place to third place with about 20.72% of the vote. So Up the Groove is ahead by essentially a tenth of a point. Now, Jamie Herrera Butler, former Republican congresswoman from Southwest Washington, she's a former state legislator, I believe, from the Centralia, Chehalis, Lewis County area. So she was formerly in the state legislature and then ran for Congress and ended up losing in the primary a couple of years ago to Joe Kent. And then Joe Kent ran and unsuccessfully did not win the congressional district, but he's running again this year. And his numbers, at least from the primary, are looking pretty strong. So Jamie Herrera Butler's first place right now. Dave Up the Groove would seem to be in second place. And one of the reasons this is a little bit strange, I got to pull up a post that was made by a Seattle Times reporter back on Friday before we had the Friday 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon vote count that was handed down. And the Seattle Times reporter, Jim Brunner, he posted about the public lands commissioner race. And he posted this: with Dems at risk of getting shut out in lands commissioner race, I'm hearing speculation they could run a write-in candidate, but Washington has a sore loser law, so it would not be able to be anyone who was already listed on the ballot in the primary. And he asked the question, which leaves who? And then he posted the link to the names of the candidates that were on the primary ballot for lands commissioner. But now, all of a sudden, a couple hours after he posted that the Democrat magically slipped or moves from third place into second place. And I'm going to try and dig through what the results were from last Wednesday, last Thursday, and last Friday. But I got to do some digging to find those. I didn't keep track of them at the time last week as this third place to second place vote was kind of narrowing. And I didn't pay close enough attention to that. And I'm now regretting that I should have. But Ari Hoffman, our afternoon host here on KVI, he and I were talking on Friday in between John's show around 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning before Ari went on the air. And Ari was relaying to me that the second place lead for Sue Cool Peterson was about 2,900 votes. And now all of a sudden, Dave Upthegrove's up by about 2,000. So I would be interested to see how, you know, that vote was changing and in the case of the second place to the third place finisher eroding before Dave Upthegrove magically launched into second place. I'd be curious to look at how many ballots were tabulated after Thursday's count, because these counts are coming in, they're getting updated every day around 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. So we had that Tuesday primary. They released the ballot results from what they had received so far earlier in the day up to Tuesday. So you had a bunch of people that were probably turning in their ballots on Tuesday. Those would not have been tabulated likely until Wednesday. And then whatever else arrived in the mail a day or two later would have been tabulated on Thursday, would have been tabulated on Friday. And that's where we sit this morning with the Democratic candidate all of a sudden leaping from third place to second place to make the primary ballot. And the post that Jim Brunner had jumped out at me before I even knew these results. And it jumped out at me in large measure because he's basically saying Democrats are not willing to accept the results of the primary polling. If it had stayed the way it was with two Republicans advancing out of the primary. Obviously that changed in the hours after he posted this. He posted this at 12:54 on Friday. Double check that. 12:54 on Thursday, August 8th. So he was posting this on Thursday before we even knew the third round of ballot results coming in. But basically a day later, what he was proposing kind of became inconsequential. But he was hearing that Democrats were not comfortable with the democracy of the August primary, they would have been willing to try and form a write-in campaign to try and submarine one of two Republicans winning in the general election. So, like I said, that's what he said he heard. He didn't cite any sources, but even if you take half of what he's saying at face value, there's another example of Democrats are really only interested in democracy when it's working out for them. If they can find a way to circumvent democracy by coordinating a write-in candidate because they didn't have a Democratic candidate that advanced out of the primary, they're willing to try that, or they're willing to entertain that. At the minimum, they're willing to try and put together a plan to do that. Whether or not they go through with the plan is something else. So there's another example of the Democrats and their tenuous connection to democracy. Like I said, it's only when it works for them is when they want democracy. Other than that, they don't. Last week on the show, John Carlson got into this story about how much money from the long-term care payroll tax that's taken off of your paycheck goes to administering this long-term care insurance scheme that Governor Inslee and the Olympia Democrats have come up with. And it's a pretty significant portion to run the long-term care insurance coverage that you would receive. So here's John Carlson explaining how expensive this is costing Washington voters.
You've heard about the long-term care program. You're paying for it. Mandatory long-term care insurance program, the only mandatory long-term care insurance program of any of the 50 states. You're paying a payroll tax, 58 cents for every $100 you earn.
Only state? We're the only one.
Only state that has this. It only has a maximum lifetime benefit of $36,500 to associate long-term care costs. Okay. Here is what caught my attention. They were giving an update to state senators and others on the Long-Term Services Commission. And even though this is a pass-through program, they said that of the $1.3 billion they expect to collect in premiums, meaning your payroll taxes, the department needs to keep 25%. Karen Kaiser, Democrat, Des Moines, questioned an Employment Security Department official about the administrative costs. He said, we're retaining about 25%. She said, Liberal Democrat, how much? 25%? He said, we're keeping about 25%, yes. She said, but wait, administrative expenses? You can't be getting 25%. That seems excessive to say the least. She said, ESD is a pass-through agent, not administering anything. DSHS administers the program. And then the director chimed in and said that ESD, the Employment Security Department, keeps up to 25%, quote, as a cushion in case of unexpected expenses. So they're keeping a cushion of 25% of the money you pay from mandatory taxation.
And that is going to be another reason for people to vote on the November ballot for opting out of this long-term care payroll tax that we were all forced into. And remember, there have already been revisions by Inslee and the legislature on this long-term care payroll tax scheme that they instituted in the first place, because everyone started pointing out all the flaws, all the problems with what they were imposing to begin with. So they've had to make corrections to this, like the portability. You couldn't take it with you if you moved out of state. You couldn't cash in on all this money you paid in to the long-term care tax and insurance that you were going to receive. And they had to make those restrictions because what they were instituting was not fiscally viable. It was not fiscally sustainable. And Democrats love to talk about sustainability. They had to acknowledge that they would basically be stealing money from someone who paid into this for all these years and then decided to retire out of state. They couldn't take it with them. So they had to amend it and fix that and correct that. And the fewer people that you get in the pool, it makes it more difficult to deliver the benefit that is promised. But if people vote against this mandatory deduction and make it an opt-in, if you want it, you can opt in. I would tell you, if you're really interested in long-term care insurance to that end, you should probably just look at finding your own policy, because it'll probably turn out to be cheaper. If you go through the state, it might be more expensive. Prices and availability may vary. I'll give you that disclaimer right now. But if everyone does the right thing and votes to make this an optional payroll tax, if they want to receive long-term care tax when they are much older in life, it will probably lead to the collapse of this, and the state will probably have to submarine it. The other big question about this, if you vote in November to make it optional, I still don't think that we have a solid explanation of whether or not those of us who were forced into it, I'm in that category, will be able to get back any of the money that we paid in. Because I'm guessing once we decide to make it optional, if we pass this initiative on the November ballot that would allow people to make it optional, I don't know if we're going to get our money back that we've paid in already. If you're taking suggestions down in Olympia, here's what should happen. If this initiative passes, all the money should just go back immediately to the people who paid it. There should be a credit to everyone who paid in. It would be easy for the state to figure out. They know where that money came from. They know who it should go back to. And if this opt-in initiative passes, that money should go back to everybody who paid in. Then they should start from scratch. Once you get that opt-in date going, then you start taking it from all those people that are choosing to opt into it. That would be an easy way to pay back the people who really didn't want this, who really didn't ask for this in the first place. And then you can start fresh and start anew with the people that do want to be in it. We'll find out, I guess. Obviously, it has to pass first for any of my suggestions or theories to go into effect. But that is something that I would hope that ends up happening, because it would be nice to have some of my money back since I didn't ask for this in the first place. So, like I said, individual results may vary, and check local listings for time and availability. But I'll just give those disclaimers again.
You know, it's amazing too, Phil, the fact that a lot of people they just don't look at check stubs anymore.
Usually you don't.
Yeah, right? And if you look at it now, here we are, you know, now into August, look at how much has been contributed already here, and you'll find the category there in all the breakdown there, usually where, you know, all your expenses for maybe company paid parking and other situations are listed. You will be amazed how much money is sitting there just for this year. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But the state getting into the long-term care payroll or long-term care insurance business, it makes no sense. We already have insurers that do that, and they do it fairly well. There's no reason for the state to get involved with this. This is another classic example of government mission creep. We can't run a ferry system. We talked about that in the last hour. But you know what? Let's get into the business of running long-term care insurance. That's something the state should be doing. No, 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 no.
And do some research on that, too. Whether you're close to retirement or just, you know, a few years, maybe 20 years away, you'd be impressed, Phil, and everybody listening, how many different programs have been developed over the years because of baby boomers and what we dealt with our moms and dads when they were limited on opportunities in this country. We got so many programs, Phil, that help you for retirement to pay for expenses like long-term care. Do some research, and you'll see a lot more savings than what you're seeing in your paycheck.
You pointed in that clip that I replayed from John. This is the only state in the nation doing it. Gee, I wonder why. It's because there's no need for the state to get involved in an established business that's already working for the most part. People can go and pick an insurer that they like. Okay, we got to get to the social media sweep. That's coming up next. Kamala Harris is copying a Donald Trump campaign idea. Oh, of course. Why not? That's totally par for 2024 and the presidential election, that Kamala Harris needs to now copy and promote something that Donald Trump wants to do on his campaign. So we'll do that. And then coming up at the bottom of the hour, if you didn't hear it on Friday's show, John Carlson's explanation of the vaunted COVID snitch line in Tim Walz's Minnesota. So that's still to come here as I sit in for John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Talking about that little lady, and the lady is mine. Put your hand in the hand of the man, steal the water. Put your what song is this? Joan Baez? Who is this?
The group Ocean.
Ocean. Okay. Seems like you've had a couple of folk-style songs from the 60s and the 6 o'clock hour, now 70s and the 7 o'clock hour, and I guess I didn't commit Ocean's band name to memory for some reason. I remember the song.
Just
everyone
show,
knows the song, right?
We have it for everybody here, Phil. Everybody welcome to KVI. You even got the songs to prove it here, bumpers.
In for John Carlson here on the Carlson commute. John's out today, but he'll be back tomorrow. I'm Phil Vandervoort, John's producer, radio legend Mark Christopher, along with me for the journey this morning. Time for the social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. We have a campaign story here coming off of social media. A lot of different people sharing this moment from a Kamala Harris Las Vegas campaign rally. And she was speaking to a pretty big, pretty enthusiastic crowd. And you know, a big voting constituency in the state of Nevada is hospitality workers, people that work at the casinos, the hotels, things like that, people that bartend, people that clean rooms and things like that. And they, a lot of them, work for tips. Guess what Kamala Harris said at her campaign rally in Las Vegas?
And eliminate taxes on tips for service and hospitality workers.
And for hospitality workers, as well as hospitality workers, as the vice president said there. But the reason that's significant is this is something Trump has been talking about repeatedly from June to July as he was campaigning. He said, hey, there shouldn't be taxes on the tips that people in the service industry or hospitality industry go out and work and becomes a big component of their take-home pay. And I had rattled on about this on the KVI website. If you want to see it on KVI.com, go over to KVI.com. You scroll down the page just a little bit. You'll see underneath the bar that says KVI News. There's some of the local stories that we produce here at KVI, and there's one that says commentary, the continuing media vendetta against Trump. And this is something that I wrote and posted myself last week and posted it on KVI.com. And it's about Hospitality Workers Union endorsing Kamala Harris last week. And this was before she made this suggestion that she would support not taxing tips. And the Associated Press did a story on it, and I criticized the AP story because they omitted any sort of example of how it would illustrate what the elimination of taxing tips would mean for one of those hospitality industry, service industry workers. So the Associated Press completely overlooked that last week. I'll be interested to see now that Kamala Harris is saying, hey, maybe we should not tax tips of hospitality workers. And keep an eye out and see if the Associated Press writes a story that said, hey, Kamala Harris just said we shouldn't tax tips. Now, Donald Trump has been saying this for months, but I was upset with this AP article last week not illustrating, hey, if you didn't tax those tips, what would that mean to a regular worker? Would it give them an extra $100 a week in a paycheck, an extra $50 a week in a paycheck? What would that be? But the AP didn't do anything like that. I'm not a tax accountant. I don't know what the tax level is on tips, but certainly somebody could round up that information in fairly short order and put that into a news story to illustrate what this would mean for somebody in the hospitality industry. So let's see now that Kamala Harris is up for this idea. She's kind of co-opting what Trump has already talked about. So she's stealing ideas from the Trump campaign. Let's see if that information starts to trickle out to illustrate what this would mean in a practical sense. Because last week, the Associated Press was not interested in doing that. All right, coming up next here as I sit in for John Carlson, you're going to hear John's analysis of this COVID snitch line situation that Ron DeSantis caught the governor of Minnesota, Tim Walz, in after Tim Walz was named to the Democratic presidential campaign ticket in 2024. Now, let's get you a check on traffic. All-timer right here. Can't go wrong with this one. Here for John Carlson this morning on Talk Radio 570 KVI. Hi, everybody. Sun's up. We're up. We're going. John's out today. He'll be back tomorrow. We'll get back to normal tomorrow. I've got a couple of John highlights I'm going to play for you in the remainder of the show. Coming up right after the top of the hour, I want you to hear what some drivers told KVI's young Zach at the Berrien gas station where Let's Go Washington was selling gas for $3.45 a gallon on Friday. Some really cool comments from drivers that saw the low gas prices and then checked in and didn't realize that Let's Go Washington was doing this promotion to try and get people to pay attention to some of the initiatives that are on the ballot come November. So you'll get that update, what Zach heard from some of those drivers right after 8 o'clock this morning. Right now, I want to give you a segment that John did on Friday's show that still holds up, still's got some value, and it revolves around the selection of Tim Walz from Minnesota as the vice presidential pick for the Democrats. And it was Ron DeSantis who pointed out, look at Tim Walz being added to the ticket with Kamala Harris and how restrictive Tim Walz was when it came to COVID restrictions. And this all revolves around the snitch line that was set up in Minnesota during COVID for people to call in and report neighbors who were violating things like going to the park, going outside.
I teased this along with Steve Moore that we'd be doing this. Tim Walz, the vice presidential pick of Kamala Harris, her running mate, made an interesting comment this week at a rally with her, with Kamala Harris standing right next to him. Here's what he said at the rally.
In Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make. Even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves, there's a golden rule. Mind your own damn business.
Oh. Well, that sounds reasonable. Everyone believes that you should mind your own business. Does he believe it? Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who visited Washington State for the first time last Saturday. I was at a dinner with him last Saturday. He had some interesting thoughts about what Tim Walz said about, hey, here in Minnesota, we say mind your own damn business.
They're asking me about this Walz from Minnesota. Here's the thing. As Florida governor, I learn a lot about other states because when people leave those states, they tell me why they left those states. And I remember during COVID, the absolute frustration that people had moving from Minnesota because of how they were being treated. You know, this is a guy that's out there. He's got this line in the stump speech saying, you know, our neighbors can do what they want. Mind your own damn business. Fine. Then why did you set up a snitch hotline for neighbors to report on their neighbors for violating your draconian COVID restrictions? That's not minding your own damn business. That's government overreach.
Okay. So is DeSantis exaggerating a little bit, you know, for political effect? That happens a lot, you know, in the heat of a political campaign. I tell you what, you be the judge. This is what the snitch line in Minnesota sounded like. Again, if you saw your neighbor violating the draconian lockdown orders of Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, which were every bit as draconian as Jay Inslee's, you called a phone number. You were encouraged by Governor Walz to call this number. And this is what you heard when you did.
Hello, you have reached the Department of Public Safety stay-at-home hotline. The information you leave is considered public information. At the tone, please leave the following information. Your name, your callback number, how the stay-at-home order is being violated, and where the stay-at-home order was violated. Thank you.
Record your message at the tone. When you are finished, hang up or press pound for more options.
Yeah. By the way, if you're recording, go to hell. But that's how it worked. That's, they actually had a snitch line where you call and you leave your message, and then they could call you back and ask you to elaborate. And you would rat out your neighbor. My neighbor is going to church. My neighbor is going to church. Governor Walz actually tried to impose restrictions on church going that were more restrictive than the lockdown prohibitions on businesses. They went out of their way to make it more difficult for people to attend worship services. And so if, you know, you see somebody, you know, going out without a mask, or you see somebody who is going out and buying something that isn't an essential item, or shopping around, or you see a couple of neighbors out there chatting over the fence, call the snitch line. Let them know. So this is the brainchild of the guy who once again said this.
In Minnesota, we respect our neighbors and their personal choices that they make. Even if we wouldn't make the same choice for ourselves, there's a golden rule. Mind your own damn business.
And then this, and that's what he says. Here's what he did.
Hello, you have reached the Department of Public Safety stay-at-home hotline. The information you leave is considered public information. At the tone, please leave the following information: your name, your callback number, how the stay-at-home order is being violated, and where the stay-at-home order was violated. Thank you.
Record your message at the tone. When you are finished, hang up or press pound for more options.
There you have it. The rhetoric versus the reality. I don't trust politicians like this. I don't trust politicians like this at all. That say something for an applause line because they know people believe that Americans should. Yeah, that part of live and let live, part of the very nature of tolerance, which tolerance doesn't mean endorsement. Tolerance doesn't mean approval. Tolerance simply means you acknowledge they have the right to live the way they choose to live. And you might disagree with the choices they're making, but you tolerate their right to make those choices for themselves. And we have fallen into a trap now where if you acknowledge someone has the right to live in an eccentric or even offensive way, so long as it's legal, but you make it clear that you disapprove, then you're accused of being intolerant. That's not intolerance. That's called free speech. If you're not acting to prevent them from living the way they want, if you're not acting to prevent them, then you're merely expressing an opinion, which, again, the left does not want you to be able to do. So something to keep in mind.
Just asking people to practice what they preach. You know, if it's going to be important to have COVID restrictions and report on neighbors for doing things to violate the COVID restrictions, live with that. But don't go around campaigning like the audio clip of Tim Walz from last week saying people should mind their own damn business. Don't be a hypocrite. That's all we're asking. Don't be a hypocrite. Just stick to one standard. So that was a moment from last week's show that I wanted you to hear from John Carlson. John Carlson's out today, but John will be back tomorrow. He's just taking today off to make it a 3-day weekend and be with family and meeting up with his son. So we'll hear from stories of John's road trip, I'm sure, and more of John's thoughts on all the other political news that's going on. We've had a couple of listener text messages that revolve around, surprise, surprise, some sneaky business going on in Olympia as it relates to one of the statewide initiatives that's going to be on the ballot in November. Ari Hoffman has been all over that. I will explain that. And sadly, another drug bust, I guess. You know, it's the bittersweet news about a drug bust in Whatcom County. Pretty sizable one. And good that the drug bust has happened, but bad that it's another sign that so much fentanyl is getting into the state of Washington because Governor Inslee just doesn't really seem to care too much about that sort of thing happening. So those are two of the things that I'll hit next as I sit in for John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI. In for John Carlson this morning on a Monday, I'm his producer, Phil Vandervoort, along with the radio legend Mark Christopher at the Wheels of Steel, spinning the hits. Several people have texted in this morning Our text line, 206-421-5757. And thank you for these texts. I had seen this, but seeing that listeners are concerned about this, it involves an effort that went directly to the state Supreme Court, if I understand things correctly. And the effort was to try and throw out what was going on with one of the statewide initiatives coming up on the November ballot. A text message from Michael and Graham says, hey, I got an email from Restore Washington saying that all the initiatives we support were in danger of being stripped off the ballot. Apparently, there was a lawsuit that went all the way to the state Supreme Court to strike them from the ballot. My understanding is the effort failed, but I have seen no coverage about this. Are you guys aware of it? Yes, we have been. KVI's Ari Hoffman has been all over this. He was all over this on Friday. Another good reason to remind everybody, be listening to Ari. If you listen to John in the morning, listen to Ari for sure. 3 to 6 in the afternoon. Another text message came in. This was from Cheryl, I think. Cheryl wrote in, are you going to bring up what happened Friday about Ferguson and Secretary of State secretly trying to throw out propane natural gas initiative? Ari Hoffman spoke about this on his show Friday. He wrote, Bob Ferguson, the AG, and the Secretary of State, Steve Hobbs, were busted concealing an effort by liberal billionaires to circumvent the will of the people by booting citizen initiatives from the November election that would roll back the progressive agenda. Ari interviewed Let's Go Washington's Brian Haywood about this on Friday's show. Ari wrote, if these billionaires felt so strongly about their agenda, they could invest their own money to pay for the items they want. Instead, they are making the low income and middle class pay for virtue signaling vanity projects. And then Ari sums it all up by saying, hey, this goes all the way to the state Supreme Court. There's no public notification about this. There seems to be no media reporting about this. Ari was on it. Brian Haywood was on it and alerted Ari. And Ari asked this question, who is the real threat to democracy? And I gave you this example a little bit earlier in the show that came by way of one of the Seattle Times reporters who was hearing last week before some of the election results shifted the top two finishers in the state public lands commissioner election race to a Republican and a Democrat when it had been two Republicans that were right there at the top, that the Democrats he was hearing, the Seattle Times reporter was hearing, Democrats might run a write-in candidate like maybe a Hillary Franz, who's the incumbent public lands commissioner, but who decided to run for Congress instead, and she did not win in her congressional district in the 6th district out on the Washington Peninsula. She could have been eligible, at least, to run as a write-in candidate because of the sore loser law that we have on primary losers not being allowed to do write-in candidacy in a general election. And so that example of Democrats not really comfortable with democracy when it doesn't work out in their favor, if you had two Republicans that were the top two finishers for the public lands commissioner race, there was some scuttlebutt that they might try and run a Democrat for a write-in candidate because they don't want to have a Republican win the statewide office. So again, Democrats really selective about when they like democracy, when they defend democracy, and when they want to subvert it or circumvent it. Okay, coming up next, you'll hear about drivers that were down in Berrien getting gas for $3.45 a gallon last Friday. That's up next on The John Carlson Show. I'll always want to be there, holding your hand, and standing by to catch you when you fall, seeing you through, in everything you do. Let me.
Whatever. Yeah. Quick mention, quick shout out locally here. And this kind of got lost in the Olympics and everybody going through withdrawal. And of course, we had the preseason for the Seahawks doing so well there in L.A.
Oh, yeah, they did
Saturday.
That. Did they? Yeah.
Mariners doing well against the Mets. First time in 20
That's
years.
The Mets, though.
First time in 20 years, we have the ESPN guys doing Sunday night baseball.
Oh, really?
Here in Seattle. The other thing, Phil, and everybody listening, Little League World Series.
Right. That's ramping up.
Little League team from Puyallup.
Okay.
Has claimed the Northwest Championship. They clinched a berth there to head for the World Series. South Hill Little League team, way to go, beat West Valley Little League last Thursday. They had a game down in San Bernardino, 13-7. So the Puyallup squad now gets first-round bye in the Little League World Series. The first game they will face off against the winner of the Southeast and Midwest game, which is happening on Wednesday of this week. The South Hill game gets underway then August 16th. That'll be Friday at 3 p.m. Seattle time. Watch for it on ESPN. Here we go.
Good luck to the South Hill. I think, is it South Hill Puyallup team? I can't remember if they got specific about what part of Puyallup it's from, but it was just a year ago that the North Seattle team was doing pretty well.
Yeah, they do well.
They didn't go as far as they wanted, but they had some moments and I think some really close games for the North Seattle team.
Take a guess of how many Little League teams are eligible to head for the World Series when they all start out at springtime.
Domestically?
Yeah, just among
or
the choices.
Worldwide, because they kind of have the domestic, the North American division, and right. They kind of have the international division. I'll just say 10,000.
Pretty good, a little high. 6,000 Little League teams, and it all comes down to one from every district to try for that World Series.
My last summer at WSU, well, technically two last summers. I did summer schools at WSU, kind of my last 2 years at WSU, and so I looked into coaching Little League. And so one time I did it with a roommate. One time I did it by myself. The second summer I did it by myself. And we were pretty awful the first year.
Yeah.
But with basically the same group of kids the next year. And I'm trying to think. This was Babe Ruth League.
Okay.
Based on ages. I think it must have been like 12 and 13-year-olds or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. And we were pretty bad the first season, but first summer. And then the next summer it was mostly the same boys came back and played again. And we... I think we only lost twice.
Wow.
So very, very
Coach
gratifying
Phil.
That we struggled for it. But the one thing I would always tell the kids, and I tell the Mariners this too, and they don't want to listen to me. The Mariners don't want to listen to me. Swinging at strikes. Got to know the strike zone. You don't want to be swinging at pitches that are out of the strike zone.
Thanks,
okay,
Coach.
Bye. There we go. My baseball days of my youth. Okay. So big story for us here at KVI on Friday. Was the price of gasoline at the Shell station in Berrien on Friday morning. It was a two-hour window, but still a pretty good price for gas, $3.45 a gallon, which is the national average. John Carlson had talked to Brian Haywood from Let's Go Washington, trying to invite and tell KVI listeners to get down to Berrien for this particular two-hour sale price on gasoline as a way to promote some of the statewide initiatives, and the big one is Initiative 2117 that would deal with the Governor Inslee cap and taxed carbon pricing plan that has added an estimated 40 to 45 cents on a gallon of gasoline sold in this state. So we had young Zach, the co-producer here on the morning show, and also does a lot of work with the Ari Hoffman show in the afternoons here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. We sent Zach down to Berrien on Friday morning, right at the tail end of John's show, to talk to some of the drivers that were lined up in Berrien to get cheap gasoline. Here's what Zach found.
How'd you hear about the event today?
Carlson.
What made you come out? Is this a lot cheaper than anywhere else?
I live right down the street. I usually go down Tribal, down to Tacoma. They're just as cheap.
All the way down there? Wow.
Well, I work down there, too.
Oh. What's gas normally at this station if you live so close?
It is like, $4.50? $4.50?
Wow.
Yeah.
It's about a dollar cheaper today, huh?
Yeah. Sometimes up to $5.
Vote yes, pay less.
That's right.
Let's hope to see a lot more of this in the future.
That's right.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it. How'd you hear about the event today?
I just drove by it.
What'd you see when you drove by?
$3.45 a gallon.
Is that the cheapest around?
Yeah. I usually go down to Fife, and they're at $3.89.
And do you know what's going on here? Do you know why it's so cheap?
No.
This is an event with Let's Go Washington. The gas price that you see is the national average. So they're subsidizing the cost of fuel to show you what life could be like in Washington if you paid the national average for gas.
Oh, okay.
Seeing this, does this change how you might vote in November on some of the initiatives regarding the gas tax?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How's it going, man? Did you know there was an event today?
No, I didn't.
What made you stop here at this gas station?
I was driving by and I saw it because I haven't seen these prices in decades, so I had to stop and fill up.
By how much do you feel like this is cheaper than what you see around town?
A lot cheaper. This doesn't feel like it's Seattle right now. Wouldn't see these prices at all.
Does this feel like, is the way you're going to vote in November on some of the initiatives change when you see prices like this?
Of course. We have to make a difference with the gas because this is ridiculous. With all the prices going up and rent, food, you know, the least the state can do is probably lower the gas, you know? Yeah, it's something that we need. Transportation is a big thing, so.
How many miles a day do you drive normally?
I'd say maybe max 30.
So it's a big deal. Yeah, a dollar off a gallon.
Exactly. So it really matters. It really matters. And hopefully, you know, this really happens in the future. Everybody vote, man. Thank you.
And what is the slogan as it relates to Initiative 2117? Vote yes, pay less on the price of gasoline.
You know, I liked about this. I saw Zach out in the hallway and I had to ask him. I said, did you get anybody showing up with a big truck, four-wheel drive like what I drive, but I don't drive but only once a week into the station just to keep it nice and healthy. He said, oh, yeah, Mark. He said, what was great about it, people could fill up their tank. And people were bringing gas cans. There was no limit. So here's the math on that, Phil. If I filled up there on Friday for my truck, it's a 35-gallon tank. And the price was about, you said, $3.45?
$3.45 is what they told us.
All right, to fill it up, which I got to be honest, Phil, I have not filled up all 35 gallons. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I would have spent $120.75 for that special. At normal price right now, which we're seeing about $4.49 here in the state of Washington, it's $160.65 to fill that tank of my truck.
Single tank, 40-something dollar difference almost.
Right.
Yeah, I had been putting together some of this information for John at the tail end of last week. Mark and I are in for John this morning. John will be back tomorrow. He's just taking today off as a three-day weekend to be with family. And I was looking up the price per month in Washington for gasoline going back numerous years. So if you plug it into a search engine, you'll come up with these lists. It's not, I mean, they're pretty common to see them listed out this way. So pre-pandemic, the price of Washington gas in July of 2019, pandemic hit early 2020. So July 2019, the price of gas in our state was $3.24 a gallon.
Interesting.
And then, you know, you heard somebody in that clip talking to Zach saying that gas was basically $4.50 a gallon. So it's significantly higher from pre-pandemic. Now, if you want to go to a year ago, it's roughly the same price. So July of 2024 last year, the price of gas was $4.22 a gallon, or was was a dollar higher per gallon. So it was just a little bit less than it is now. So now it's about $4.22 at July 2024. And if you want to go into the years during COVID, it got really cheap. The summer of COVID.
driving was, and we had to do something with all the gas.
Let me see. Yeah.
I drove my truck a lot during
July
that time.
2020.
Yeah.
The heart of COVID restrictions and everybody working from home and all that, $2.70 a gallon.
Right.
So that's how cheap gas got. And then it was the beginning of 2023 when this Cap and Invest Climate Commitment Act law went into effect. And the high price of gas was in July of 2022, roughly, because that's when things had opened back up and inflation was going crazy and everyone was trying to ship stuff and truck stuff and drive. And so if you throw out the high price of July 2022 and you throw out the low price in July 2020, get rid of those and you focus on what it was pre-pandemic. And then about a year ago, it was $4.22 a gallon, and it's just a little bit over that or kind of the same amount of price right now. How about going back to the pre-pandemic price of $3.24 a gallon? Would that be reasonable?
Now think about that, go back
that'd
to
be like, awful?
When I was a kid, I was thinking of the wages I made, like, I don't know, $2 or something an hour, and gas was 35 cents. It kind of worked out. And think about the wages of today, what minimum wage is now for a lot of people, for example. And you think, okay, $3 and something kind of works out okay. Yeah. 344 right now, AAA says, as of this morning,
so
is
that's
the national,
average.
National.
Yeah. So all I'm asking for is, wouldn't you like to pay $3.24 a gallon for gas pre-pandemic? At the bottom of the hour, I have a story that I caught from Fox 13 that I think could have a significant role in and could make an impact in the election for governor. And it involves an armed robbery in South Tacoma. I'm going to tell you about the business owner, single mom who's the business owner, robbed at gunpoint. I'm going to tell you about that story coming up at the bottom of the hour, but I think this has a chance to make a significant impact on the election for Washington governor. So I'll tell you about that coming up at the bottom of the hour. Another Fox 13 story that came up late last week, and we didn't have time to get this in on John's show on Friday with all the other things that we were doing, and I want to give it some attention right here. It involves a very large drug bust up in Whatcom County. It involves fentanyl, a whole lot of fentanyl, and illegal ghost guns. Fox 13 reporter Frankie Thompson explains the bust.
70 pounds of narcotics with a street value up to $1 million now off the streets thanks to investigators with the Whatcom Gang and Drug Task Force. Whatcom County Sheriff Donnell Tanksley says investigators arrested these five people for trafficking fentanyl and drugs into Whatcom County. Their investigation started in May, monitoring the 34-year-old. That suspect was arrested, and a search warrant of his home in Bellingham uncovered evidence of him using a 3D printer to manufacture automatic firearms known as ghost guns.
Those guns don't have serial numbers. They pose extreme danger to our community. If you look at the increase of youth violence in different parts of our state, you know, I know these ghost guns, if you will, are very attractive to youth because they aren't old enough and to buy a gun legally.
Tanksley says that first arrest led detectives right to the 37-year-old drug kingpin who had been trafficking the drugs from Everett.
And you've got ages of suspects that are 37, 34, 26, and 26. So that's an insight into who's operating this particular fentanyl ring that was busted and infiltrated. Now, the ghost gun portion of this is significant as well, because what? We hear from Washington Democrats constantly about, oh, wow, got to crack down on guns. But those Democrats aren't as forthright, aren't as vocal about cracking down on fentanyl as they are on guns. And here's an example of a fentanyl ring that is fueling a ghost gun ring. So why is it that Democrats are always emphasizing, oh yeah, we got to do this, we got to do that about guns. We got to crack down on guns. But they don't put that same emphasis into fentanyl, cracking down on fentanyl. And what do you get when you allow fentanyl to be as prevalent as it is in this state? That money gets from the fentanyl distribution drug running ring. Look at that. It gets pushed into manufacturing ghost guns. And now you've got one problem that has become two grave problems. But we've got Governor Inslee. We've got Democrats that are running this state. We need the next governor of Washington to be serious about stopping fentanyl. Bob Ferguson, the leading candidate for governor, has had several chances to be serious about it, but he's either ignored it, refused to address it, because he's afraid of the political pushback from his pro-criminal Democratic colleagues at Olympia. Ferguson, in this case a week ago where we had a repeat criminal plead guilty in court to crashing into a Metro bus, causing a crash that killed 28-year-old Amanda Schneider downtown Seattle on a crosswalk. Ferguson has failed Amanda Schneider and her family, along with the record-setting drug ODs in this state, due to his refusal to get serious about fentanyl. And for that, I feel Ferguson does not deserve election as governor. That's why I think Dave Reichert is more deserving to be governor and win a 2024 election. But this Whatcom County fentanyl drug bust plays into all of these things as well. So let me remind you one more time about this story from South Tacoma. Coffee stand owner robbed at gunpoint, single mom. You're going to hear her explanation of what happened. I'm going to tell you why this has a bearing on the election for governor coming up right at the bottom of the hour. One other story I want to try and wedge in here. This is from a Seattle City Hall news reporter, Erica Barnett, who writes at her website called Publicola. And she's pretty focused on what goes on in Seattle City Hall politics. And she was writing at the end of last week about the crime problems on North Aurora Avenue in Seattle. She wrote, Seattle City Council member Kathy Moore, who represents the district in North Seattle, is organizing, quote, people who know what Aurora is like, end quote, to turn out in favor of her legislation creating a vast new banishment zone for suspected sex workers and customers on North Aurora. Those caught near Aurora Avenue could be charged with a gross misdemeanor. And here's a little bit of why that's important. North Aurora Avenue has had all kinds of crime problems, and this Seattle City Council member is finally pushing for some tangible responses to those shootings, the break-ins, the crime problems there. And I can tell you this, I lived just off of 92nd in Aurora for about 2 years in the mid-1990s. Back then, 95, 96, when I lived there, I was just around the corner from what's now Eagle Staff Middle School. It wasn't great then, but it was light years better than it is now. So there are so many more dangerous crime problems and shootings on North Aurora these days. And here on John's show, we can't cover all of them. We cover a few of them, the most significant ones. But numerous crime and public safety news stories come up in other media outlets, and we simply couldn't cover all of them, even though they get reported by other news outlets. And the point of this is that Seattle progressives are always telling us we have to respect lived experience. But Seattle's progressive left clearly wants to ignore or perhaps even silence the lived experience of the neighbors who are sick and tired of hearing gunshots in the middle of the night, of having homes and businesses and cars repeatedly broken into, along with the ongoing concerns about public safety there on North Aurora Avenue in Seattle. I'd submit this is another example of the progressive left using these nifty political buzzwords like lived experience and then completely ignoring them and forgetting about that language that they invoke when it doesn't benefit them politically. Big surprise, I know. They only like those buzzwords when it benefits them politically, and that's what's happening with this course correction, which is badly needed up on North Aurora Avenue in Seattle. All right, we'll get into the socialists on social media coming up next, and then that story out of Tacoma that could impact the governor's race as we sit in for John Carlson on Talk Radio 570 KVI. The whole break answering listener text messages, our text line at 206-421-5757. Almost forgot to load up my socialists on social media posts and tweets. So let me get that pulled up here and we'll get rolling. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. We do have a presidential debate coming up between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump September 10th. That'll be on ABC. I don't think that they've pinned down the time, but you can bet it's probably going to be in that 5-6 o'clock Pacific time range, so they can set it up for 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock Eastern time and get the big Eastern portion of the United States population there to watch it in prime time. And we all watch it a little bit earlier out here on the West Coast. The social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. So Hakeem Jeffries is the House Democratic leader. In years past, this would have been called the minority leader. Or the majority leader, stuff like that. So Hakeem Jeffries is from New York. He posted, Donald Trump is clearly too old to debate Vice President Kamala Harris. And this post came down last week before they kind of got some of the fundamentals nailed down for this debate. But Hakeem Jeffries says, Donald Trump is clearly too old to debate Kamala Harris. He's afraid of getting smoked in front of the nation. What a fraud. I'm like, okay, we'll see about that, Leader Jeffries. Elizabeth Warren, Massachusetts senator, posted that the grocery store chain Kroger, and Kroger is significant out here in the Northwest because Kroger happens to own QFC and Fred Meyer stores, which a lot of us go to. Grocery chain Kroger is trying to pull a fast one on us by using digital price tags, a move that could let them use surge pricing for water or ice cream when it's hot out. And then Elizabeth Warren sums it up saying, corporate greed is out of control, and I'm saying enough is enough. And links a CNBC story that says, as inflation fury lingers, politicians join customers in pushing companies to cut prices. And I have to laugh about Elizabeth Warren complaining about surge pricing because Manhattan in New York City has been going round and round about a congestion pricing toll to drive into or out of the city or through the city for a couple of years. And the New York governor just pulled the plug on it because it was becoming so unpopular as an idea with the concerns about what that would mean for transporting in food for people to buy at restaurants and markets. And they don't necessarily have grocery stores per se in New York. They tend to have those corner markets and things like that. There was all this objection to the cost that surge pricing to drive into the city at certain times of days was going to end up costing as it got passed along to consumers. And the New York governor, who's a Democrat, put the kibosh on it. But I don't ever remember Elizabeth Warren saying, hey, this congestion surge pricing idea for downtown Manhattan, New York, it could be a bad idea. But now she's concerned about surge pricing when it comes to grocery stores. A little selective outrage.
I just tossed something in there, too. As you shared that, I think about it, a headline over the weekend, Neil, now that we have the Olympics done and it goes to L.A., L.A. is already saying one of the rules for the summer games here in a few years here, 28, no cars allowed.
Yeah.
All public transportation to get around town to get to all the venues. And you bring up the restaurants, the shopping, and things like that. Yeah. How will that affect L.A.?
Good question. L.A. is already facing all kinds of congestion problems as it is. And then this surge pricing to drive into the downtown core. Seattle's been flirting with this idea for a little while. The momentum has kind of fallen off, but this is something that has come up a lot in Seattle political circles as well. But there's your U.S. Senator from Massachusetts, Senator Elizabeth Warren. All right, coming up next, I want you to hear a woman who's a single mom, business owner, South Dakota, robbed at gunpoint. Armed robber came up and robbed her business. I'll tell you why I think this could have a big impact on the vote for governor in the state, or at least why I hope that it will have a big impact. We'll go into that story next as I sit in for John Carlson. John Carlson's just out today. He'll be back tomorrow, taking a three-day weekend. And I guess we were just talking about the congestion and the traffic. Let's check the traffic right now.
Something's got to change. You know, I mean, that could have easily been a really bad day. Like, my kids, sorry, my kids could have had to bury their mom.
That's a South Dakota business owner trying to hold back tears after she was robbed at gunpoint. Was not sure if she was going to live or die or be shot. That Tacoma woman speaking to Fox 13 News about that story, and I'm going to get into more of what all happened there in South Tacoma. I've pointed out, as I sit in for John Carlson this morning here on KVI, I'm John's producer, Phil Vandervoort. John will be back tomorrow. Repeatedly, with the time I've shared on the air with John, I've pointed out about the continuing crime, public safety problems across Seattle and Puget Sound amount to a war on women. And criminals, repeat criminals in particular, often target women in their crimes, and then sadly, women become collateral damage. And I don't know why it is that either we as neighbors, as voters, as a community tolerate that we subject women to this danger. And we're not just more adamant about demanding real answers. Because we have politicians in Olympia, King County, that have said, hey, if you don't get a vaccine, well, you're going to have to lose your job. And some of those people were first responders, state patrol, sheriff's deputies, police officers. And it's no secret, Seattle's at the lowest point in its police staffing, and particularly at a per capita rate of staffing. And then we wonder why repeat criminals are so emboldened that they just keep committing more crimes because they figure that the odds are in their favor. Police won't respond in time. Police won't find them. Police won't collect evidence. police won't be able to build a case. People won't be able, or police won't be able to identify them, and that they'll continue to go out and cause this kind of mayhem. And then Fox 13 has this latest example out of Tacoma. Here's the story from the Fox 13 anchors.
And Pierce County deputies are looking for the woman who held a local mom and small business owner at gunpoint, all for $100.
And get this, the entire endeavor was caught on video.
Give me.
Investigators now searching for that woman you just saw on your screen. This armed attack happened at Revive Coffee near the 512 on-ramp in Tacoma.
So that's South Tacoma Way, Highway 512, right next to I-5. The Fox reporter A.J. Janneville, he went down to the Revive Coffee stand, spoke with the shop owner. She's a single mom who bought this business several years ago. And there are many times where she's at the shop where she's had to have one of her kids right there with her as she works and runs the shop.
I really felt like I was going to be shot.
8 years ago, Peyton Jones took a leap of faith.
I bought my business as a single mom. You know, I'm raising my daughter in there with me.
So that is the reality that some single moms, and certainly a mom that's a business owner, has to juggle. Here's a little bit more of what happened with this armed robbery. The robbery happened last Thursday. Fox 13 aired this story on Friday.
I've never had a gun pointed at me.
Thursday morning, Jones tells me this woman ran up to her window and threatened her and her employee.
I don't want to kill you. I don't want to do none of that.
Cameras show the terrifying situation from inside the coffee stand. And despite this nightmare, Jones went back to work that day.
I can't take that time to, like, miss out on opportunities, you know, to pay our bills.
She tells me in total, this gunwoman and getaway driver made off with about $100. But she says they took so much more from her.
Something's got to change. You know, I mean, that could have easily been a really bad day. Like, my kids... Sorry. My kids could have had to bury their mom.
She's holding back the tears, thinking about how this could have transpired, and thankfully it did not. But she's pointing out there, hey, I can't afford to take a day off. I have to keep running my coffee stand, otherwise the money does not come in if I'm closed down. But this is the burden she's facing. She says something's got to change. And when I heard her say that, as I'm watching this on Fox 13 on Friday afternoon, I was thinking, somebody at the Dave Reichert campaign, and if you want to apply this to the Attorney General campaign, because that's going to be a close race as well, somebody at these campaigns for Republican candidates needs to talk to this business owner, this single mom at Revive Coffee in South Tacoma, and remind her that the leadership in this state has brought things to the point where somebody will walk up to a coffee stand, pull out a weapon, and in this case a gun, shove it in somebody's face for $100.
Yeah, that was a shock, too.
$100.
Hearing that story and the energy, and I'm thinking, okay, somehow these thieves maybe have staked out the coffee stand. It must be a moneymaker.
Who knows?
So yeah. Here comes the energy. I'm pointing the gun. She's trying to do what she can, you know, to get them. All for $100. Now, I went, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
All that, and it, again, like she said, what if it ended up, you know, they pulled the trigger anyway, and now my kids are going to bury their mom over $100.
But this is the climate that has been created in Jay Inslee's Washington, that someone whips out a gun, sticks it in the face of a, in this case, a coffee stand. And the armed robber is a woman as well. Doesn't necessarily know that it's the business owner, doesn't necessarily know that it's a single mom. But here's the woman, Peyton Jones, putting everything that she has on the line financially for her child, for her as a mom, to own and operate this business. And if KVI listeners are down there in South Tacoma Way, there at the 512 I-5 junction. Try and do a pit stop at Revive Coffee there.
Pull in
and see if you can patronize that business. Because I think this gal deserves the boost, deserves the support from customers. Mm-hmm. And I would hope like crazy that somebody at the Reichert campaign, Reichert himself, goes, connects with her and says, hey, this is why I think you should be voting for me, because we don't want to see these stories keep happening.
Oh, yeah.
And like I said, women sadly become the targets for crime, and they become the collateral damage.
Yeah, and everybody says, well, I see something, but why call it in? Police can't respond. There's not enough. See something, say something. Here's why. Yeah. You'd be amazed how many surveillance security cameras are around these neighborhoods now, especially down on the waterfront here in Seattle, and they can always go back, give them a time, give a date, and they just go through some of the video and find out, and they get a license plate number or maybe description of the thieves here.
It sounds like in this case, from what I took away from the video, it didn't say it explicitly in the Fox 13 story, but it looks like the person came up on foot. So, the Revive Coffee stand there on South Tacoma Way at 512 has security cam video. I don't know how much it pans around. You're right, maybe associated neighboring businesses and things like that could have some security video that kind of helps, but they don't have an arrest. They don't necessarily have a suspect description other than it being a female.
Time of day.
So it was daytime.
Obviously.
From the video that I saw. But there's no arrest right now. I don't know what they've got as far as leads on a suspect. But you're talking about an armed robbery. I would hope that there is a big emphasis on Tacoma law enforcement getting a jump on this and getting some investigation going to make an arrest because this Revive Coffee stand owner, single mom, does not deserve this after she's putting everything that she has on the financial line to own a business, run a business, and do it for her child as a single mom.
One more time, location in the street if somebody's listening saying, I want to do something.
I don't know the specific location, but it's described as South Tacoma Way. They're at the 512 I-5 junction, and it's kind of that edge of Lakewood, South Tacoma there, and the coffee stand is called Revive Coffee.
Perfect.
So Peyton Jones is the name of the woman that owns it, and hopefully we get some results with an investigation and an arrest and hopefully a criminal conviction if it comes to that. All righty. In for John Carlson here, Talk Radio 570 KVI, along with Mark Christopher. All three of us here on the show, we've been big fans of the TV show Yellowstone. Kevin Costner on the show. I might give away some spoilers. So if you want to watch the show, but you haven't watched the show lately, turn down the radio for a few seconds.
Can I go to a tease on this? I got a good tease for it if you want to let me do it.
Well, it only involves characters who are being written in or out of the show.
All right.
So turn your radio down if you don't want any spoiler alerts. They are due to crank out new episodes.
Right.
And episodes will come up starting November 10th. So apparently they announced that late last week, and they've written out the big main character. And so now they're trying to – what were you finding about how they're trying to incorporate other actors and possibly new actors into the storyline?
So let me set this up here. Okay. And we've been hearing Matthew McConaughey. And, you know, they started the last season. They got halfway through it, Phil, and they stopped.
Okay.
And they're like, okay, we'll wait till the fall. And then we were hearing about Kevin Costner. Well, I've had enough of this or whatever. Mm-hmm. So Taylor Sheridan, bless his heart.
He's the creator and writer of the show.
Yeah, has to figure this thing out. So a lot of rumors online confirming some stuff. And I went and found some sources early this morning. I said, Phil, we got to bring this up. So the fall conclusion of Yellowstone. Okay, you got a date of
November 10th is when the new episodes will resume. And they did a couple episodes to start what is now season 5. Mm-hmm. And then this is the second part of the season 5 episodes
that
will come up in November.
So we heard about Matthew McConaughey would just step in and take over, and Taylor Sheridan would work on the series here, how to get Costner kind of out of the way here as John Dutton. And we'd hear a name and whatever assignment from Matthew McConaughey. Taylor Sheridan's sequel series will be called Madison. Not the previously floated 2024.
Wow. Okay.
So we're thinking Madison. That's what it's going to be. Matthew McConaughey are going to bypass, who was long rumored to take the reins of Sheridan's flagship franchise. Now, we don't know yet how Madison will connect to Yellowstone's ongoing Dutton family drama, or if Kevin Costner's departure will somehow figure in. Who is coming in? Who are they talking to about Madison? Michelle Pfeiffer.
Okay. And I know a little bit geographically about this portion of the Idaho, Wyoming, Montana intersection. And if they're going to call the show the Madison, I'm guessing this revolves around the Madison River, which is a major
makes sense
trout fishing mecca for people that enjoy trout fishing. And it runs there out of Yellowstone Park and then kind of just south of the area that I would have to imagine that the TV show Yellowstone is set in, although I'm not an expert on Montana geography. But the show is rather fantastic as primetime soap operas go. I started watching, Kirby Wilbur was the one that got me going on watching it. He was enjoying it. Mm-hmm. And based on Kirby's enthusiasm for it, I started watching it. And it's a little reminiscent of the 70s, 80s drama, primetime drama, soap opera, Dallas, right? J.R. Ewing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the South Fork Ranch. So it's got a lot of those hallmarks, but there are just so many fantastic plot points in it. Incorporates a lot of modern day politics into it as well. You have to suspend belief on a couple of plot points that just are too fantastic. You're like, okay, like this wouldn't set off all kinds of alarm bells. But if you can suspend some belief about some of those things, it is a pretty wildly entertaining soap opera.
If you look at it in those terms. Somebody, the actors and performers, liked it so much, having so much fun doing the series, they moved out of L.A.
Okay.
And moved to Montana.
Okay, yeah.
Or at least had a
second
home.
That's the toughest part for people in Montana who are natives is the amount of people that flood into the state just to be there for the amazing beauty and recreation and landscape and wildlife and all those other fantastic reasons to reside in Montana. All right. Mark Christopher, Phil Vandervoort, in for John Carlson here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. We'll tell you when John is coming back. And then I got to answer some listener emails that are text messages, rather. Listener text messages that are coming in as well about our Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest. So we'll do that up next. Carlson here on a Monday. John will be back tomorrow. He was just taking today off to be with family. He was taking a little road trip on a three-day weekend. So we'll get John back in the studio tomorrow. A lot of people have been asking on the text line, 206-421-5757, Phil, what about the contest?
Ooh.
Take the Trip or Keep the Cash contest that we've been doing for the last 8 weeks. Well, last week was the final prize that we had in that contest. So that contest has concluded. And so I've answered several people that have brought this up here in the last 45 minutes or so after we got to the top of the 8 o'clock hour, and there was no clue. And you're right. I'll admit I probably could have said, hey, last couple of weeks, 8 weeks, we've been giving away a great trip every week. And today we start anew, but the contest has concluded. So that is the reason that the contest keyword was not given out.
More fun on the way, though. Stay tuned.
Contest-wise? Speaking of contests,
yeah.
I have to make this admission about my 16-year-old son. My 16-year-old son does fantasy football, and we're getting into, you know, time to pick your fantasy football teams and all that jazz for the coming season.
Yes.
And so when I was a kid, we were doing rotisserie-type baseball, fantasy league baseball stuff, and me and my buddies, we would all throw in a little bit of money each, and then the top one, two, or three people, depending on how many people we got in our league, would split the earnings. But my son and his classmates, again, he's 16, they don't want to reward the winner. They want to have one of the whoever loses.
So no money win.
Essentially face a punishment. Now, last year, they wanted to do this super hot spice chip. One of the loser was going to have to eat. And these are 15-year-old kids last year. And, of course, there was a story that one kid ate one of these chips and died. So this year, their punishment that they selected is the loser has to go to an IHOP and spend 24 hours at an IHOP, but they get to reduce the hours stayed by 1 hour for every pancake they eat. So if you spend 12 hours, you'd have to eat 12 pancakes, and I'm not sure if I should be worried or nervous or terrified about this,
but
that's my 16-year-old son and his friends.
I'll go for the pancakes. In the morning, like mine.